And it's not a buzzword here. It's not a marketing gimmick. It's a really deep, diverse, and dynamic food scene.
I really think that this is like an emergency of the highest order.
They're doing takeout right now at the front door. Every meal is $10 just to try and survive and pay the rent. But as she pointed out, what is she going to do with this long-time family business?
It doesn't matter who you ask, from industry analysts to members of the media to executive chefs. The message is clear.
Right now we're closed. We've been closed since March 15th, so we're definitely in a tough position right now.
A main ingredient in Portland's identity is in critical condition.
It's common for people to talk about Portland's culinary scene in the same breath as New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago.
Today, a look at how the iconic Portland food scene collapsed in a matter of hours in mid-March.
We all kind of closed down on that, the black weekend of March 14th and 15th.
And an extended conversation with Portland restaurateur and James Beard award-winning chef Naomi Pomeroy about the industry's struggle to survive and a new effort to save as many restaurants as possible. It is Friday, May 8th, and you are listening to the COIN Podcast Network coverage of the coronavirus pandemic.
From our studios in downtown Portland, Oregon, this is a COIN 6 digital exclusive.
How long have you been reporting in Portland?
A long time.
Reporter Lisa Balick covers the restaurant industry for COIN 6 News.
So you've seen the restaurant industry here kind of explode.
Oh, definitely. And we are such a focal point for people around the world, the destination spot. People come in to eat the food here. That actually is a big reason. The tourism industry depends in large part of the food aspect of Portland. It's a huge draw.
I caught up with Marcus Hibden, Director of Communications and Public Relations for Travel Portland, and he agrees.
Portland's culinary scene has always been a motivator driving visitors to Portland. It's a message that we deliver to every consumer audience that we engage with. It's something the city's known for worldwide. It's something the city's celebrated for, and it's one of the strongest tourism assets the city of Portland has to offer. There's a lot of great food in the United States of America right now. There's a lot of great food in the world, but there's also a lot of great food in Portland, Oregon, and people know that, and they come here to check it out. They come back here once they found out how great it is.
As the coronavirus pandemic worsened in early March, business at Portland's restaurants slowed to a trickle.
We've walked in about half a dozen restaurants, asked them what's going on inside their buildings. They say they are seeing a decline in customers. They're having to let some wait and kitchen staff go home early. It is very unsettling for those employees and the restaurant owners.
And then stopped almost completely on March 17th, when Oregon Governor Kate Brown prohibited all in-restaurant business.
I think that the effect is going to be just devastating, and I don't think people quite understand that yet.
Now, one of the biggest names in the Portland restaurant scene joins me for a look at the dire situation we are in now, her feelings about plans to reopen, and why she feels it is critical for Congress to step up and save small restaurants across the country. Here is my conversation with Chef Naomi Pomeroy.
Well, I kind of became a chef by accident. I actually have a history degree from Lewis and Clark, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my degree. Basically, I always used to procrastinate on my studies by doing cooking projects. I would have a paper to write, so I would, you know, bake a cake or whatever. And I found that I was always dilly-dallying and starting big, long projects. And I started working for a catering company when I was still in college. I just decided that I was really passionate about that. So I started my own catering company out of my own basement when I was like 22. Over time, I just became a chef. I don't even know how it happened.
Was that the first time people were paying you for your food?
No. I actually did a few paid gigs while I was still in college. And then I ended up catering a friend's wedding. I got paid a couple times, and I guess I was hooked after that.
And when did you open your first brick and mortar restaurant?
I started doing some underground dinners out of my house in 2000 after my daughter was born. And then I was already doing some catering events out of my house too. Our very first, I guess, quote unquote restaurant would have been called the Gotham Building Coffee Shop and opened in 2002.
I don't think anyone would say opening a restaurant and keeping it open is easy, but in your time as a chef, have you experienced anything as challenging as where we find ourselves right now?
I certainly haven't experienced anything as globally challenging as this. I mean, you know, most restaurants in Portland are shut down. The ones that are open for takeout and delivery only. And if you ask any of them what they're doing as far as revenue numbers comparatively, most people are doing somewhere at the top end, 20%, and just goes down from there. So no, I haven't seen anything like this, but I have, you know, had my own fall from grace. You know, that was 2006 when I had to lay off 95 employees and close 3 restaurants, but that was not because of a virus. That was because of, you know, poor business decisions and, you know, being young kids that didn't know really what we were doing. And moving out of that time was really painful and difficult for me because it was personal. And, you know, the failure felt like it was kind of on my back. In this case, you know, I've been running a successful business for 12 and a half years at Beast and profitable every year, which is amazing. And now it's closed, you know, due to no fault of my own.
You mentioned those experiences from 2005 and 2006 as being very personal, but are you able to draw back on them to help other people right now? Or are you, can you apply anything that you learned then?
I guess the silver lining here is that during this time in this crisis, there is a lot of camaraderie building. I mean, it's very unfortunate that it's a lot of shoulder crying and hand wringing and hair pulling. You know, it's a very confusing and horrifying time, but it, I guess it does feel better than being alone in that time. I also would say this. I would say, you know, when COVID crisis hit, I kind of hit the ground running. And I would say partially that's just my personality to try to pivot and become, I guess, supportive to my community at large. But I also felt uniquely positioned to do that because I have lost everything before. And I think a lot of people, I saw a lot of real fear in the eyes of my compatriots. I feel for them. And I kind of wanted to be the voice of, like, you can come back from some pretty hellacious things, honestly. You could either ball yourself up and protect yourself and give up, or you can just kind of put a stake in the ground and fight for something else new and cool. And I think that's actually what everyone else is going to have to do right now. We have to use each other as resources. And I do, because I've been through crisis before and made it through, I feel uniquely positioned to offer some guidance and help and a little bit of pep talk, you know, like it's like, even if you have to close your business, even if you even had to declare bankruptcy or you lost something that you thought you'd never lose, there is a chance to come back.
How bad do you think the immediate short-term damage to the Portland food scene is going to be?
Unbelievably bad. I would never call myself an optimist or a pessimist. I would say that I am very much a realist. A lot of people are talking about, well, it just got to get reopened, or some people in the public maybe view restaurants that are doing like takeout and delivery programs as people who are going to make it through this crisis. It doesn't really move the marker that much. I mean, some people, for sure, there are people who are doing better business than ever with takeout and delivery. And those are places that were already designed to accommodate that. But I really think that this is like an emergency of the highest order, to be honest. I think, not speaking in hyperbolic terms, I don't even think restaurant owners necessarily are in touch with how long of a marathon this is going to be. And now we're opening back up into this unknown time period.
That's kind of where my next question was going to go. This idea of a 50% capacity that appears to be one of the regulations that's going to come along with this getting restaurants open. When you think about it, how many restaurants can actually operate that way?
Yes, we have to have social distancing. So, you know, for me at Beast, like I have 26 seats. So if I have 26 seats crammed into this tiny space, I know that when I map out the footprint of keeping 6 feet between parties, which is going to be required, probably going to be able to fit like 8 to 10 people in there at a time. I guess I just need to educate people about the numbers that we're talking about here, because a restaurant's profitability in general is around 10%. If you do the math on this, if you take away half of our ability to meet our bottom line, you know, to make our sales goals, 50% is, it leaves us at negative 40. There's not, it doesn't matter how big the restaurant is. If we are reduced to 50% seating capacity, you can only cut your costs back so far. You know, you can hire back less staff. You could spend less money on food. You could raise your prices. And I could guarantee you, you're going to see all of those things from all of these places. But even then, I have a feeling that most of them won't survive at a 50% capacity. I want to keep people safe. And I think everybody in the Portland community, I can guarantee you, every restaurant owner wants to keep their employees and their customers safe. I mean, that's, we're in the hospitality business for a reason, but we're not really being given the tools to do so. We're asking the governor to consider not mandating the 50% capacity, but instead mandating the 6 feet distance, because that's a different equation for some people. Mine is kind of the same thing. If I cut down to 50% capacity, I'd be at 12. If I do social distancing, I'm probably 8 or 10. You know, we have to go out and spend money to reconfigure our restaurants. If I have to take the tables out of Beast and put new tables in and make menus that we can laminate and disinfect the menus between every customer, not preset the table, I mean, it's going to take longer to eat out. We can't fit as many people in. I think that's okay. I'm not one of the people that might be complaining about these measures, because I really think that the worst thing that could happen for us as business owners is to have another outbreak and have the state shut down again, and have to go through the closing and opening and reopening period again. It's one thing to try to figure out and finagle how to do this once, but it's certainly going to be a whole nother thing if we have another state mandated closure because there's an outbreak, and I just don't know how we would ever bounce back from that. So an answer, long-winded answer to your very simple question, I think that the effect is going to be just devastating, and I don't think people quite understand that yet.
Do you agree with the sentiment that Portland's food scene may recover, but it will never be the same?
Yeah, of course I agree with the sentiment that, you know, Portland's food scene will recover. Here's the thing about like chefs and restaurateurs. None of us got in this business to get rich. If you did, you're probably really bummed out right now. You've probably been bummed out for as long as you've been in this business, because, you know, even when you see someone on television or you see someone with a packed restaurant, their margins are all pretty much the same. We are in the business of employing lots of people and keeping working lots of winemakers and cheesemakers and farmers and ranchers and fisher people and all that stuff. So the ripple effect is going to be huge. I had a conversation recently with a large business that does food service for a lot of restaurants. And you know, they told me that there are $1.2 billion in open invoices that they're sitting on from restaurants that have shut down and haven't paid them yet. So that's heart-stopping, because you realize that that's potato farmers in Idaho not getting paid. That's truck drivers not driving anything. The effects are really massive. I mean, the restaurant industry overall employs 11 million people. 8 million of those people are currently out of work. I'm not saying it'll never live again. I'm not saying that something can't come about that will be maybe similar in spirit. But, you know, I think the reality is the reality.
You mentioned the 11 million workers nationwide and the 8 million that are now out of work as we deal with this pandemic. Portland isn't alone here. You've recently joined an effort to protect and potentially save independent restaurants throughout the country. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
My involvement in that kind of sprung out of this random thing that happened when a few restaurant owners here in Portland were talking right before we all kind of closed down on that dark, the black weekend of March 14th and 15th, when everyone sort of started shuttering, and we formed the Portland Independent Restaurant Alliance. And then I got a phone call probably that Monday from this guy named Andrew Chasson. He works for Creative Artist Agency. He reps a lot of chefs, well-known chefs. And he asked if I would sit on a call with a few other chefs in the James Beard Foundation and some people that you definitely recognize. Right after we had that meeting, we realized that there were a coalition formed in Seattle and a coalition in the South, in New Orleans. I mean, I don't know how many there are, but we kind of discovered that there were at least 15 or 20 sort of sizable coalitions across the country. And we realized we needed to try to unite our independent voices because they're just stronger when they're together. We have a lot of the same needs. And so we formed the IRC, the Independent Restaurant Coalition. We invited kind of the leaders from all of the different smaller groups to sit on the coalition with us. And it's a loose coalition. I mean, like, we started 6 weeks ago and we have over 60,000 members now. James Beard Foundation gave us some money. We got some money from Chase and American Express, and we decided to use that to buy a lobbying team.
And how has the response to that effort been so far?
We've really just made amazing inroads in this short period of time. Everybody that we've worked with in DC has said, wow, you guys as this coalition have gotten more done in a short period of time than we've ever seen in any coalition that's ever formed. So that was pretty awesome. But you know, that also tells you that the house is on fire. We have a lot of work to do. We've basically spent the last 3 or 4 weeks trying to just navigate the CARES Act, try to get fixes put into place that would help restaurants be able to use the Paycheck Protection Program. Because currently, you know, the way that bill is written, it's we're getting grants, but we don't know how to use them because we're not open. It's just kind of a disaster. Basically, we're given money, but we really don't know how to spend it. But the truth of the matter is, like I discussed with you before, is that we have this long, it's really a marathon, not a sprint, right? We're looking at least 12 to 18 months of restructuring that's going to happen in our industry. And I think one of the frustrating things is that going into DC, I've realized that there's a lack of knowledge overall about how restaurants are run, about what we truly give to our economy, both in the sort of downstream ripple effects of what we do, you know, who we buy from. There's, you know, linen companies, wine distributors, big name brands like, you know, Sysco or US Foods. There's so many people's jobs that get affected when a restaurant closes. We've now introduced a letter to Speaker Pelosi and the other Senate majority leaders asking for a $120 billion stabilization fund. We are there making a big noise about making sure that independent restaurants get some help to float through this unknown period of time. You know, so I can do things like change the way my tables are set up and rebrand my business, and so can everybody else, because I'm this time in this crisis, I am not alone. We're all in this together, but Congress is going to have to put their money where their mouth is, literally. Why the hell are people not looking? People still on the Hill are looking at restaurants like they're individual, like cute little businesses or something like that. When ultimately, if you put us all together, we contribute $1 trillion. We're 4% of the GDP of our economy.
You feel that the majority of the people, whether it's lawmakers or the public at large, doesn't really understand the spider web effect of what a restaurant provides to the economy.
I know that they don't. I know that they don't, because we would have already gotten funding that we could use if they understood it. I think there's a misconception about restaurants, you know, that they'll be fine, that they'll bounce back. I mean, I'm going to give you two other ripple effects that you might not have thought of, because we could talk about farmers, and that's an obvious one. We could talk about winemakers. That's pretty obvious too. But let me give you two more. Let's talk about the real estate industry for a second. Every time a new building goes up anywhere, the first thing that an owner of a building does is tap a restaurateur to become an anchor tenant, because that's what drives people to want to go to that building. There you have it. If we don't have restaurants, you don't have anchor tenants anymore. Another one is the travel industry. Portland is known as a food city. Any given night, I walk around my restaurant every single night and I say to people, how's your meal? How's everything going? What brought you in? And where are you from? And you know, you have the chat. And I will tell you that at least half the time, if not more, those people tell me they're traveling to Portland as tourists. They came to Portland because of the food scene. If we're protecting airlines, have we thought of the fact that most people who fly around, like literally fly around because they want to go eat something? I mean, I know that people like to do sightseeing, but people go to Europe to eat pasta. Let's be real. And so we have to talk about those effects because I think it's way, way deeper than just saving restaurants. To be honest, it's saving the economy. We propped up the airline industry and we gave them a carve out, and we employ 15 times more people in the restaurant industry. Dining out is a bipartisan issue, right? Like everyone likes to eat food. So we are lucky in that way. I think it's really just going to be about like making enough noise and taking this seriously enough to get the recognition that we need. We're asking to be stabilized for the rest of the year. Because look, we don't know what we're facing until we get a vaccine. And we deserve to make it through this time period as much as anybody else does.
Naomi, thanks for spending some time with me. What are you learning through all of this?
I guess I'm just a pretty positive person. I like to generally sort of accept whatever's happening and do the best that I can with it. I can talk about the Cortland community, but I can say I'm seeing this reflected all over the country in people really coming together in a powerful way around this crisis. And I think that there is a reckoning happening with food and our food systems and our values. And I trust and I am inspired by the idea that chefs will take this to the next level and figure out how to make our community have greater food security than it does right now. A crisis like this really puts a lot of things into perspective. And what makes me feel hopeful is that this is a time for reflection. This is a time for us to possibly fix some of the things that have been wrong with our industry. I feel optimistic that people in Oregon and in Portland will be willing to pay what it costs to eat truly in a restaurant. I actually have faith in us that we care about food that much here. I think that we're in a unique and good position here to be maybe at the forefront of that part of the conversation too, about creating a more sustainable future for restaurants.
Naomi Pomeroy, thank you very much for your time this afternoon.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care.
Also today, it seems more likely that Portland Timbers fans will be waiting through at least early fall to see their team play in person at Providence Park. While the Timbers returned to voluntary workouts Thursday, and owner Merritt Paulson tweeted he remains convinced meaningful games will be played this year, Oregon Governor Kate Brown says large gatherings, including sporting events, need to be canceled or significantly modified through September. That does it for Friday, May 8th. I'm Ian Costello for the COIN Podcast Network. Stay safe, take care of each other, and we will talk to you soon.
The COIN 6 Podcast Network is your home for all sorts of content you can't find anywhere else. Visit coin.com/coinpodcast to see our entire library. And you can always subscribe to all of the COIN 6 podcasts on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.